Well, it's funny. I tested this today, and it still didn't land on the right cue. So we're going to talk about an interesting topic. I figure, you know, on Sunday mornings, that's our time to where we normally do evangelistic type services, because sometimes there's just a lot of people here that don't know the Lord. But by and large, our evening services are a collection of believers. Not necessarily always, but still mostly believers. So I feel like we need to sometimes discuss quite a bit of things about Christian living. And so I was moved to talk about this tonight. We're going to be coming through Romans chapter 12, if you want to be finding your place. Romans chapter 12 is a very interesting one. In fact, it's got one of the most famous scriptures in there. I'll go ahead and quote it because I don't have it up here. It says, "And be not conformed," you can probably memorize this, "to this world. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." So Paul is beginning a small discourse here to explain to us how to live. And all through the Bible, it talks about things on how to live. And it's an interesting portion in this scripture. I'm basically jumping in to the middle of his conversation here in his writing, starting at verse 9. So here it says, "Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, and cleave to that which is good." Can anybody tell me what dissimulation means? Look, I love the King James Bible, but we don't use these words, folks. We don't. So the King James sometimes is very hard to understand unless you have helps. Dissimulation is like being fake. It's hypocrisy. This is something they do in acting. You don't see their true nature, you see the actor. And the actor is performing a scene. And yes, sometimes it can be very moving, but they're performing. That's not really who they are. And you might have people in your sphere of influence who are performing in front of you. We would call it two-faced. Okay, you know that term, two-faced. That's not who they are. They may be good in front of you, but they're not good behind your back. We've all probably encountered these kind of folks, and they're always going to be around. It's not something you can just, you know, wish and get away with it, but the fact is there's a lot of people who will have or perform dissimulation. And so he's telling us, let love, our love, be without dissimulation. In other words, be sincere. Be sincere, not fake. And that's what he's talking about. And abhor that which is evil. We need to get away. That word abhor sort of like means it's where you get sick. You see something and it just makes you sick. You don't like it. You hate it that much. Abhor that which is evil. We should run from evil. And then he says, cleave to that which is good. Grab hold and don't let go. That's what he's talking about. And then verse 10, he tells us, and by the way, this is a series of things to do to get along with Christian people. How interesting that Paul has to remind us how to get along with each other. Why? Because we have a tendency to not get along. I mean, so many places he talks about being divisive in church, or at least in our assembly, and being divisive and hate one toward another. I mean, it's just all kinds of things. I could give you all kinds of examples. So he's saying here in verse 10, to be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, and in honor preferring one another. And unless we dig a little deeper, sometimes a lot of this might just go over our heads. But brotherly love, meaning that I should love you, every one of you, as I would my brother or sister. That kind of love. Not just a mere acquaintance, but as somebody who's close to me, to love you, to help you. And he, there's a lot more going to be on, but this is a part that's really hard for a lot of people, in honor, preferring one another. A lot of people like to be first in line at a dinner, or first in line, whatever event might be going on. They always want to be first. In fact, they'll kind of position themselves and elbow you out of the way. Well, a lot of people do that, and they jockey for position, but that's exactly the opposite of what he's saying. It's like you should prefer someone else. In other words, give someone else the honor of getting in line first, or getting whatever first. We should not always push to get ahead in front of somebody else, or at least at the expense of someone else. So much of that goes on in the business and in other places, but all you have to do is take a look, which I know we've all participated in the Black Friday sales for Christmas. You see how everybody's jockeying in for position, and there's almost a stampede. When those doors finally open, there's almost like a stampede. Well, that may be an exception to this rule, I don't know, but the thing is, we shouldn't always be the ones to try to get in there first over someone else. So we should love them sincerely, and also like a brother or a sister. But then he goes on, and again, this is Christians, people who follow Christ, to get along with other people who follow Christ. So he says, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Now, most of us, I believe, know what a sloth is. They just kind of move like this. And they just, in fact, it almost looks like time is slowing down. It's almost near stop. We have a dog at home. I'm beginning to wonder if there's not something wrong with the dog. It's a golden retriever, Deronda knows. The dog will be walking in, smiling. You know how dogs are, like this. And it just, all of a sudden, and we're like, it's like time stopped. All of a sudden, that dog will just freeze frame, and nothing happens for maybe 10 seconds. And I tell her, I said, look at that dog. It's just frozen. In whatever pose it might happen to be, may have its head down, may have it up, but it just like freeze frame. And it's almost like time just stopped. But that's kind of the way being slothful. That's lazy, folks, being lazy. So we should not be lazy, especially when we're working for other Christians, but anyone for that matter. But to be fervent in spirit, that's almost like being energetic. I know, sometimes it's hard to be energetic all the time. But whenever you're serving the Lord, where it says at one place to do it diligently. You know, we're not to do things half-hearted. I was actually pleased when Eddie said this morning that we need to carry on, because he's going to be gone maybe 3 weeks. I don't know. I don't know how many services he's going to miss, because I told him, I said, we'll just have to play it by ear. But the fact is, we can't just slack while he's gone. You know, consider it a test run, if you want to, as how it might be if he just wasn't here for the time being. So we need to be fervent in spirit. We need to serve the Lord energetically, hopefully with all we've got, and do it with fervency and like I said, with energy and not being slothful, not lazy. But then he says, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer. Wow, you put all those things together, because believe it or not, they're connected. They're all connected. Because when we have tribulations, problems, issues going on in our life, that is so easy to get our hope to be gone, to we don't necessarily lose hope, but we feel diminished in many ways we feel diminished and we tend to become impatient. Whatever we're going through, the trials, the problems, and things that we have going on, yes, I'm like you. I want them over with right away. I'd like to be on the other side right away. But unfortunately, in this cursed world, that doesn't happen, or at least it doesn't always happen quickly. So he's saying, rejoicing in hope. Well, who is our hope? That's in Jesus Christ. Our hope is in Jesus Christ. So the good news is there is an end to all of this. All of these, I mean, it breaks my heart sometimes when I see a prayer request and we have such long lists, and the issues and the problems that people have are great. They're usually not small at all. But the fact is, we have to keep hope and at the same time to be patient in all of these trials and tribulations that we go through. And trust me, I know how difficult that can be. But I think this is the key to the first two, is to continue instant in prayer. That's something that Jesus and Paul and all the apostles have talked about, is to not only follow Jesus, but to constantly have a conversation going, a dialogue going. And I know it might sound strange, but if you're in a car by yourself, well, the way I am when I'm driving by myself, it's like I'm talking. If somebody were to see me from at stoplight, they'd probably just see me chattering away. Who are you talking to, Earl? Well, sometimes myself, but most time to the Lord. You know, because sometimes I get on myself. Do you do that? I talk to myself. The reason I talk to myself, I like to hear important people talk, and I like to talk to interesting people. So I talk to myself a lot. But sometimes, a lot of times, I'm talking to the Lord. Because, you know, folks, sometimes the car is where your private time is, your private space. So that's when you can just let it out and just open your heart to the Lord. But that's being instant in prayer. I've actually learned, it's actually come from a hard lesson sometimes, but I've learned that when somebody asks for prayer requests, don't leave. Pray right then. Pray right then. I have learned that if I go home to pray about your request, it's not as, I don't know, what's the word I'm trying to say? It's not as fervent, maybe, but when you're right there, you can pray over whatever it was. And Duranda and I were standing down here, and Dorothy was here, and she came up. Bless her heart. She walked up to both of us, and she said, "Will y'all pray for my head?" You know, because she's had headaches for a long, long time. And we said, "Of course, yeah, we'd pray." But she was getting ready to turn around and walk away because we were going to pray for her later. And I told her, I said, "No, let's do it now." And do you know, she went home. You know, I didn't do anything special, but she went home and her headache went away. Did it ever come back? Did she say? I think she said it hadn't come back. But, hey, that was an opportunity for God to show off. You know, God, oh my, He does such amazing things at sometimes when you least expect it. And I guess that's what makes me stay in awe of everything that He does. He's just so amazing, so awesome, that I know. And by the way, we want to pray for Nolan here right after the service. Let's pray, and for anybody else who needs it. But let's be instant in prayer. In other words, keep that word continuing. Keep a dialogue. Keep a conversation going. You'll be glad you did. And then, of course, he's saying distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. There's always this tendency, especially in a bad economy, and folks, it seems like we're sliding downhill a little bit, but there's always this tendency to hoard things, to not share, to not bless others. I'm reminded of back when, I think it was Elijah, when he visited the widow, if you recall that story. So he went there, and she, of course, had a son, and they were on the verge of starvation. And so the fact is, he goes in and he basically said, "Make me a cake." And all she had was just enough flour
to make one last thing of bread, and she was going to eat it with her son and die. She had already given up hope. But here he comes, and he's asking for to be served. And I'm guessing, maybe out of faith, maybe she recognized who he was, but perhaps it didn't even matter whether they have that one last meal. But she served Elijah first. And you know the story, the flour and the oil and all that stuff, it didn't run out. It didn't run out. And if you don't understand, there's actually modern examples of that. Does anybody know who Corrie Ten Boom is? She was during the Nazi encampment. Yeah, so during the war in Germany, they were rounding up all kinds of people, the Jews especially, but even the people who were helping the Jews out. And her house, her father especially, took on the dangerous action of helping Jews to go from this place and help them escape somewhere else out of the Germans' hands. Well, they eventually got caught. And Corrie and her sister Betsy, they all went to prison, into a Nazi camp. And it was by miracle, really, they were able to sneak things into the Nazi camp, a Bible for one. But here's the thing, they had a small bottle. I don't even know what kind it was. She just called it vitamins. Small bottle of vitamins, liquid form. And it was a dropper that she used. But it was one of those glasses, you may have seen them, that they're very dark. You can't see inside. So anyway, she had this bottle of vitamins. And for her and Betsy, they were using it to give a couple of drops a day. That's all it, because they knew how bad these concentration camps were. Well, other prisoners, the women, saw what she was doing. Hey, I want some. Well, Corrie wanted to hoard it. No, we don't have enough. Betsy was more spiritual, and she said, no, we're going to share. So they did. They started sharing with everybody. You realize that little bottle of vitamins lasted for 2 or 3 years? You know, and when I'm reading her account of it, it was when they had their final day at the concentration camp. They went to take more vitamins. It was miraculously gone on their final day at the concentration camp. Stuff like that gives me hope. But that's following this rule, this distributing to the necessity of the saints. These were people who were already in prison with them, many of them Christians, or at least following God. They may have not have believed in Christ, but they were attempting to follow the law. And so we have to have a propensity to be given to hospitality. There's so many people out in this world who are so inhospitable that they just don't want to have anything to do with anybody, and that's sad. But to get along with each other, we need to be hospitable. But here you go. This is where Paul begins to step on my toes. I don't know about you. Bless them which persecute you, and bless and curse not. It's one of those things, like if it wasn't written in the Bible, it's like, I might could make it. You know, this might be the way I could handle it. But the fact is, it's there. And when people wrong us, the first thing we want to do is retaliate. Somebody cuts us off in traffic, or somebody gives you the one-letter IQ finger. You know, those kind of things. It just infuriates me. And you want to retaliate right away. Well, we know that we shouldn't do that. But it says not only to remain calm, but to bless. Oh my, if somebody just cursed you out, would you be able to say God bless you at the end of it? I was considering interviewing for a sales job at our company. I was interested in transitioning from what I was doing. And this job had come open for sales, inside sales, and you had to be on the phone a lot. And I asked one of my friends there who was in that job, I asked him, I said, how do you like it? What do you think about it? And he thought for a moment, and he looked at me. He said, well, let me ask you one question. He said, could you be cussed out over the phone and at the end of the phone call say, thank you, call again? I said, I don't think so. He said, you don't want this job. And I didn't take it. I thought, well, you know, first of all, I want to keep whatever job I got, I want to keep it, but I've seen what they've had to go through, and I don't know that I could handle it. Yeah, Rhonda, you know some of this. You know how it is dealing with people at work. I mean, the thing is, it can be brutal. But I wasn't able to say thank you, which is kind of like a blessing at the end. Bless them with who persecute you, and curse not. And remember, this is getting along with fellow Christians. So then he says, rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. This has a lot to do with empathy. Empathy, being able to be around somebody who's sometimes happy, sometimes sad, and able to relate to what they're going through. A lot of times we quote platitudes. Oh, it'll get better. You know, everything happens for a reason. All, you know, we say all these things. And sometimes it just rolls out before we have time to really think about it. And people are really hurting. They're hurting. And we need to weep with them that weep, because we need to be able to understand and feel the pain that they're going through. Some people just need people to be there, not necessarily do anything, but just to be there, even in the good times and in the bad times, sometimes especially in the bad times. He goes on to say, but be of the same mind, one toward another. Mind not the high things, but condescend to men of low estate, and be not wise in your own conceits. Right there in that one verse, he covers so much ground. So much ground, because he says, be of the same mind, one toward another. Well, first of all, that doesn't mean to think the same. By the way, that's a cult. If you think everything the same, you're probably in a cult. But what it means is that we all have to have the same goal. What's your goal when you come here? Hopefully it's to worship the Lord. That should be your goal. Not to come hear me or hear the singing or hear any of that. Yeah, all that might be good, but the fact is, your primary purpose to be here is to worship the Lord. And so we should be of that same mind toward each other. But then he goes on and says, mind not the high things. you ever meet people who think that they're way better than what they are? All the time, right? Well, that's what he's talking about. Don't you think higher of yourself than you really are. Mind not the high things. Don't put yourself on a pedestal. Believe me, I've run into those. The opposite of that is to condescend to men of low estate. That means, what are you able to actually come to somebody, I don't know, maybe somebody who's homeless, or maybe somebody who doesn't smell all that good because of poor hygiene? Are you able to be around and still be cordial and helpful and whatnot? I remember working at Kroger's, bless her heart, Bobby Weiss was the manager there at the time, and I was working at Kroger's, and I had asked her about it so many years ago, but the fact was, she remembered an instance where there was this man coming down. I had no idea, a man coming down, and one of the cashiers had asked me, he said, Earl, would you mind bagging this man's groceries? Which, that's what I was doing anyway, and I said, sure, I'd do it. And she said, thank you. She said, I just can't. I didn't understand. I didn't know what was going on. Well, when he got down there, he got right up in my face, and he was telling me where things needed to go and how to bag things like that. And I'm getting woozy, you know what I'm saying? It was awful. I mean, I don't know. It's like just the odor was so, so strong. And the fact was, it was overpowering. The test is whether or not you can still hang in there and help somebody like that. Again, I don't know what his circumstances was. I just assumed there had to be a good reason, but that was the fact of life, that I was faced with somebody who was difficult to just be next to. I don't know if you've encountered that before. And then I understood what this lady was going through. And so I bagged up his groceries and I put it in the bag and I'm thinking, finished. Can you push him out to the car for me? I'm like, oh, Lord, help me out. And so I had to push him out to the car. And of course, he's there directing everything. Put that bag over there. Put that bag over here. I mean, I had to put it just in the right order where he wanted. I got it done, but it was brutal. But the fact was, I think of that situation when it says here to condescend of men of low estate. But then it says, be not wise in your own conceits. Wow, we use that word sometimes, conceited. Some people are so conceited, they think they're everything. God's gift to women, or women's gift to men, or whatnot. You know, it's like, really? You think you're all that when we're not? A lot of us go through periods where either ourselves or we meet people who really think very highly of themselves and they think they're it. And we have a phrase, come down off your high horse. Because that's what is happening here. So Paul is saying to help get along with each other, we need to come off our high horse. We need to stop thinking that we're so important that the church just can't get along without me. Well, that ain't true. Church has been going on way before I got involved. So we can't be like that. And that's, again, that's getting along with other Christians. But now he transitions. Not only with other Christians, he's talking about with unbelievers. We got to live with unbelievers. But here we go. It says, recompense to no man evil for evil, and provide things honest in the sight of all men. Again, he keeps meshing a lot of thoughts and a lot of topics here. But we all know what it feels like to want to pay somebody back. If they hit us, we want to hit them and whatnot. But he's talking about if you can restrain yourself, and we ought to restrain ourselves, just like when that sales guy said that, can you withstand somebody cursing you out over the phone and you not retaliate? Well, that's what this is. Don't repay any man evil for evil. That's probably one of the hardest things to do in getting along with unbelievers. Because unbelievers don't have the same code of ethics you do. You believe in the Lord and you try to follow all that the Lord teaches you. Well, they don't. And they don't care. And if they can set you off, sometimes that gives them a little satisfaction. But see, we're not supposed to give them that satisfaction. We don't repay evil for evil. Remember the previous verse where it said, bless and curse not? See, all of this goes together. They're not isolated. But then he goes on to say, provide things honest in the sight of all men. Here we have to behave ourselves when we think no one's looking. You notice how sometimes we tend to get a little lax, maybe, whatnot. Maybe we might be working and we know no one's looking right now, so we can just kind of goof off a little bit. Well, no. We gotta be honest as if somebody is looking, even when you don't think they are. So it comes down to a question. Are you the type person in front of people as you are away from people? I hope I am. I hope I'm just as diligent, just as honest when I'm where I don't think anyone can see me as I am as when I'm in front of everybody. I want to be the same person. And that's what he's talking about, to be honest. Here's a tough one. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. In other words, don't stir things up. We got to be careful, folks. Even living among unbelievers, we got to be careful with what we say about other people. You know, everybody has a tendency to gossip, to talk, and to spread things that maybe might not be true, but yeah, we've heard them and they're sensational and we tend to want to pass it along. And maybe, you know, everybody's got another best friend because we tell somebody and we say, well, don't tell anybody I told you. Well, they go and tell someone else anyway, and for long it spread like wildfire. It's kind of funny, when I got here, I heard about the slaw dog from four people, I think. People asked me about that slaw dog, so I'm thinking, well, first of all, it came from Dronda and Aaron, but that wasn't something to keep secret. But for those of you who don't know, when I traveled, and I traveled to Atlanta before I was headed to Paris, I actually stopped at this, it was a hamburger hot dog stand at the airport, and it literally said on the menu, chili dogs, this kind of dog, and then down here it said slaw dog. So I thought, what do you think when you think of slaw dog? I thought mustard, chili, and slaw, right? No, it was just a weenie on a bun with slaw. I'm like, who eats things like that? I don't. Do you? Okay, well, all right, you would have been okay. But I had no clue. I mean, I had no clue. I'd never been to that place. So then when I came back from Paris and I landed in Atlanta, I hadn't eaten hardly anything for 15 hours. Anyway, just little snacks and whatnot. So I went back, and everything else in that part of the airport, it wasn't very good restaurants. And so I went back to that same one, and I asked the lady, I says, ma'am, I said, can I get a slaw dog with? And I told her what I wanted on it. She goes, sure. So she fixed me two of them. And I got it, and I was like all happy. You know, I'm going to eat, chow down. And I took first bite on it, and I looked at it. She, for whatever reason, they wrapped a slice of cheese around the weenie. And it was hot, and of course, it melted the cheese. I couldn't peel the cheese off. I thought, who eats this? Okay, see? But I didn't ask for it. That's my problem. I didn't ask for it. I told her what I wanted on it, but I always get a little... And Dorinda could tell you, I've had the worst experience on this trip of getting something good to eat. I tell you, I just have not been able to get something good to eat. I'm so glad to be back. Anyway, so there's that. But as far as it lieth in us, we're to have peace with all men. Do you realize there's a lot of people out here who don't want to have peace? They're all the time wanting to stir things up, and they're all the time wanting to be agitators because they don't care, they're unhappy, and they want to let you know it. But see, that's where I don't want to say we are exempted, but the fact is, as much of it as depends on you, he's saying, sometimes it doesn't depend on us. But as much of it that does depend on you to have peace with all men. Don't go stirring things up. But then he says again, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, rather give place unto wrath. Now that's a hard one. When somebody is being wrathful to you, you know, actually wanting to get physical, it's hard to calm it down. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. So I can't think of some really good examples, but let's say somebody comes and for whatever reason they egg your car or do something just to be mean. What are you going to do? I don't know. I hope I can follow this. I really do. I hope I can follow this and not repay, because the Lord will repay. And then this is a verse that is a little bit controversial in a way, because he says, and by the way, this continues from the previous verse, therefore, if thine enemy hunger, so if you find out that your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink, and in so doing thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. In our world today, we think that means adding fuel to the hellfire, right? I'm not so sure that's what he's talking about. Go back and think about this a little bit, because the whole context is getting along, first of all, getting along. So when you find that your enemy, somebody who really hates you and is trying to do bad things to you, if he's thirsty, give him food. Or if he's hungry, give him food. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. Because if you do this, guess what? You're blessing him, and not cursing him. So back in the ancient times, fire was a very difficult thing to do. I don't know if you realize this. They did figure out ways to use flint rock and other things to create fire, but a lot of times they actually carried around hot coals so that whenever they got where they were traveling, they could start a fire and have their meal and go on. So when you're heaping coals of fire on their heads, that's how they carried it a lot of times, right on top of their heads. You may have seen it before. So really, you're giving people a blessing. Now, this is controversial because a lot of people don't know what that means exactly. It comes from Proverbs. Paul's actually quoting Proverbs. I don't remember this specific verse, but that's what he's doing. He's quoting Proverbs. And so I want to end with this. Of all the things that Paul is telling us to do, kind of like your Christian to-do list, think of it that way. In fact, I'm going to commit to reading this every day, probably at least for the next few weeks or 30 days, because I want to get it ingrained. I want to have this in my head so that I can understand how to live, not only with the fellow Christians, but with unbelievers. It's very important that we get along. So much of this depends on us getting along. But he says, be not overcome of evil, or you could say with evil. Don't be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. You know, I can't think of anybody else besides Jesus who went through so much evil and he endured it, all because he loved the people who were doing the evil to him. If you can, none of us would, of course, be in this position, but when he was on the cross and they were nailing him to the cross, he said, forgive them. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. How is that? If I could only attain such an attitude of love. Father, I want to thank you, Lord, for your words. They're both encouraging, and in some places, Lord, they look like they'd be very tough to put in practice. But Father, I know that the spirit that is in us is greater than he that is in the world. So I pray, Lord, that you would instill these principles, these values in our lives, in each of our lives, so that we can live as proper Christians, not just to each other, but we can have harmony with those without. And so, God, I pray that you help us to be a light unto others and help us, Lord, to instill these principles and put them into practice in our lives every day. And bless us in Jesus' name. Amen.